You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Let's get to the stat of the day here so that Chris Cody, he could shake. Look at him. He's rubbing his hands together. He thinks he's got a good one.
Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is the stat of the day.
The stat of the day is presented by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This comes courtesy of Sam Esfandiari, although it's a stat, so I could have looked this up, so I don't know why I'm crediting him. For the series, the NBA Finals, Steph is shooting 14 for 31 on wide open threes. 45%, pretty good. For the series, in very tight threes, he's 11 for 20, 55%. So basically, the strategy should be don't guard Steph.
We've never seen somebody who can shoot like this. I don't know if he can do it four times in seven games, but Stan Van Gundy told you the last time he was on, the Boston Celtics have an appreciable talent and size advantage. They might not win because Steph might be Steph four times in seven games, but he's telling you that when he's watching it physically, Draymond can't do anything because it's varsity against JV in terms of size. Draymond, a Hall of Famer, is being turned into a shame-soaked incompetent who has to be benched by his coach while he goes loud on podcast, promote my podcast, I want all the attention. Holy shit, that's a lot of attention. Oh my God, I'm terrible at basketball. I'm the worst thing you've seen in the finals since Ben Simmons, and I'm a dude who scored 30-plus in a game seven in a finals once. But now every time I shoot, everyone watching in America knows I'm frisbeeing up a garbage can lid to hit the side of the backboard or the side of the rim in a way that's totally flat because everyone can see I don't want to shoot out here.
But is the key to being bad with confidence? Because he does it with such a brashness that I'm in control. I'm doing everything right. I can't shoot, but I'm doing everything else right. I'm defending right. I'm setting screens right. I'm ball handling right. I'm passing right. Everything about the basketball game, I'm still doing correctly. I just miss a shot every now and again. He's even said, look, I'm not as good at shooting threes as Steph and Clay are. Why would you even want me to shoot threes? I shouldn't be shooting threes. And the Celtics are leaving him open. He's 0 of 9 from 3 in this series. But he does it with such a confidence, and I'm like, I still think he's good, even though his box score numbers are terrible.
He might have confidence. Every time he lines up wide open from three, I want you to imagine. It's not one of these small garbage can lids. It's not metal either. It's one of those plastic ones. Big green plastic
ones. Can we do that? I want to go out to a hoop.
Frisbeeing.
I think I'll do better than Draymond.
Every time he takes a three, it's like he's frisbeeing up there a garbage can lid on one of those heavy industrial size strength garbage cans. I have no confidence that he will not be the worst player in the history of basketball. And it's weird to have that be the loudest podcast guy. Yet this is you have that stat. I've got this one. From Micah Adams, there have been 2,553 finals games where someone has played 34 minutes. He is the first player ever to foul out with fewer than 5 points, rebounds, and assists, making the argument it's the worst finals performance you've ever seen. that Draymond Green is totally incompetent, making Steve Kerr bench him at a critical moment. America's loudest sports podcaster, who has climbed to the top of the rankings because every time he comes to one of those press conferences, he's promoting the Draymond Green show where he talks freely about the worst finals performance any of us have ever seen. Because he's real interested in getting back to his podcast. It is delightful. It's wonderful.
Don't you hate people who promote their podcast shamelessly? That's ridiculous.
I ask you again how you guys think after going down 3-1. If that fourth quarter goes differently, if Tatum gives you anything and you've benched Draymond and they're down 3-1, do you think you're getting on his podcast not questioning Kerr's move to bench him in the fourth quarter? Do you think you're getting go-along guy who says, well, we lost that game, but it's not because he didn't trust me in the fourth quarter to be out there as a champion, as the guy who's at the core? Like, Klay Thompson might be a liability, but really, Draymond, the very end of your triumvirate there where they've made you famous, is Steph's going to have to bail you out because you're the worst? The worst?
You're the worst behind a guy who missed 900 days of basketball because of two nearly career-ending injuries. And Klay Thompson has still been more trustworthy in the series than Draymond Green. This is a guy in Draymond Green who once in the playoff run, I think when they won the 2017 title, shot 41% from three. And that's unfathomable now.
At the end of the Warriors' run, when you're the dude who ran off Durant, the last embers of this thing, either successful or otherwise, are going to be dragging the ashes of your ass because you got nothing. You're going to be a liability. The Warriors, we're all looking and like, oh, wait a minute. They're thin. After Wiggins, good God. Where are they going to get? If Poole's not giving them something, hey, Draymond, would you like to play? Draymond, would you like to give us a dozen points? Dan, or you just want to fight with Cedric Maxwell?
Could you have envisioned before the start of the playoffs saying the phrase, after Wiggins? Because going into the playoffs, like, there's this one Kansas basketball fan who's been in my direct messages since October. Because I said on the show that Andrew Wiggins... No, I haven't once. He sent me like 11 messages. And I said that Andrew Wiggins was bad at the start of the season. And I will have to retract now. I waited because he was an all-star, but he was bad in the second half of the regular season. He's the only dependable Golden State Warrior and goes out as Draymond Green gets benched in the fourth quarter and sets a career high, regular season and postseason, in rebounds by 3 rebounds. Like, he was fundamental in winning that game and has become the second most dependable Warrior. And I would not have thought entering this playoffs that the Warriors have a chance if Wiggins is the second most dependable Warrior.
Can I ask you a serious question?
Yes.
Do you want a future in this business?
Mm.
Yes or no?
Yes, yeah. That'd be great.
You can't let the reply guys win. You need to double down and say Andrew Wiggins is not good. You can't retract something you said, a take you had, because someone's been DMing you, telling you how wrong you are.
I was entrenched. But if you do it in the finals, you can't really argue with that. Like, no. Andrew Wiggins has been really dependable, made a bunch of open shots, good defense, good rebounder in the finals. Like,
you can't lose an argument you don't give up on.
Mm.
That's right.
So you just want me to stay entrenched.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Push it further.
I was actually listening this weekend to NBA insiders, and I saw some tragic mistakes being made by Amin El-Hassan and Zach Harper, and these are the mistakes. First of all, Amin El-Hassan, when I tuned in, was simply not listening to the person he was interviewing and lost his train of thought and forgot what his question was. The person he was talking to called him on it, and he admitted that he was not listening and that he was distracted. He was looking at Instagram. Then Amin El-Hassan turns to Zach Harper and says, the winner of game 5, blank. And Zach Harper says, no, the loser of game 5 is going to win the series. And by the end of the segment, Zach Harper realized that he had picked the Celtics before the series, but was now picking the Golden State Warriors to lose game 5 and then win in 7 games, thus ensuring that he will be wrong because he's picked both sides.
He'll also be right. Exactly, and that's why they're pros, Dan. These are two of the best in the biz here at Metal Arc Media. Witty, you need to learn from the masters.
You have not yet doubled down on the absurdity of this, but what you're watching, and this is what's wonderful, right? It's not just a historic player who has changed the game. as now you have all sorts of people in Golden State, the general manager, everyone else saying, Steph Curry, stop questioning him. He is a made man. Nothing that happens in these next three games changes that Steph Curry is a made man. But we're about to see the most unprecedented shooter we've ever seen. He's three games away, two victories away from dragging Draymond Green's carcass into getting the last laugh as Draymond gets benched. Again, that's such a hard move for Steve Kerr to make. Good God, because he loses Draymond. If they lose that game, if they lose that fourth quarter, Draymond, who's rage-filled and playing on the cusp of emotion, a guy who's been ejected because he can't stop kicking people and hitting people in the nuts. He's like on the cusp. He was saying at the beginning of this series, I deserve deferential treatment. He didn't call it preferential. Deferential treatment, because when I get one technical, I play in the rage and the ref's got to let it go. He's benched. Benched in the middle of the series where you've made a star of yourself for your mouth. Benched because you're the worst player on the floor, and Steph, the smallest one, is dragging you and your podcast to more games and not allowing you to destroy this team the way that you did when you went after Kevin Durant. Like, Draymond, here it is for you. It's the triumvirate. It's the Holy Trinity. No one's ever beaten you guys whole. They need something from you, Draymond. Something. Not benched in the fourth quarter as our season's being decided. You have as much to do with the result as I do, watching like the rest of us.
But something has never been for Draymond Green scoring. And so it's always been an intangible rebounding, defending, screen setting, passing, bringing the ball up the floor. Like, he has never, even as he gets respected as still on level pegging with Steph and Clay. If you look at his box score numbers this season, that's not what they would indicate. It's people telling you that know about basketball, this is the best defender in the NBA.
He's got more fouls than points.
Yeah, that's who he's been nonstop fouling in this series. And it's because Boston have put him under pressure. They keep driving at him and he has to make decisions.
But are they going to play him? Like, are they going to, is he going to lose minutes because they have to space the floor? He is important. He passes very well to Steph. He sets very good screens for Steph. The stuff off of him and Steph seems to work no matter how good the defense because of how excellent Steph is.
But when he got benched for Kevon Looney. Kevon Looney doesn't stretch the floor. He just, I think
he stretches it more than Draymond, who they are not respecting to make anything from anywhere because they're treating him like Ben Simmons.
Well, I think that's the difference, is that Kevon Looney will roll to the rim and live near the rim.
Looney and four guards. Looney, you're small, but it's Looney and Wiggins, and you're not. Look, man, the lineup of death is done. If Draymond is benched, the lineup of death is done. Draymond is the weak link. Clay is now a liability. Golden State looks thin. And their only hope is, Steph, can you please be greater than anyone's ever been shooting a basketball?
And he says, yes. Yes, I can. And he has.
Two times in four games.
I think Draymond Green is getting too much criticism.
Three times in four games.
I think
in every game.
He's been great in every game.
He's been
great. You can't have a quibble with any of his games.
You know what? My bad. They've only won two of them, but the ask of Steph is, Steph, can you be better than them? Can you be better than all of them? Number one defense, because Clay's a liability, Draymond's benched, and you're out here with Wiggins and Poole, and we're not even sure what Poole's going to give us every night.
It's exactly the same thing the Heat were asking of Jimmy Butler. Steph Curry is answering, yeah, I think I can. Clay Thompson is getting a free pass here. He's the one who's supposed to be the big scorer,
he's
not
hurt,
Draymond
though,
Green.
But we all know that this year he went from not playing, like, he went from best two-way player to liability on defense.
Right.
He's going to get a pass because of the injury. What'd you say? How many days, Chris Whittingham?
It was 900 days that he missed.
You can't just come back and be the same guy.
Well, I don't think he'll ever, well, you don't want to say ever, but it's hard to imagine he'll ever be the same athlete that he was before that. Like, those are two insurmountable injuries. Achilles and ACL back-to-back, and you don't play for 3 years?
Like, I thought...
Maybe next year we'll see a version of Clay.
Say never. Say never.
No.
You have to say
I
never.
I have to. I'm going to equivocate and say maybe there's a chance that next year he looks like
the equivocator.
Renewed athlete.
You're very bad at the take thing.
Yeah.
Can't equivocate.
You can't equivocate with the take. You have to get out there and say the thing. For 4 years with Kevin Durant, They were overwhelming, and it was hard to stay together. The energy of it defeated them. Durant at the end is just like, bleep off. I'm going to go with this misery Kyrie, and I'm going to quietly sign in Brooklyn. I'm so tired of these TV shows and all of the decision. I'm just going to go to Brooklyn. I'm tired. Draymond, get it out of my life.
And if he stayed healthy, he would have won 3 straight championships.
Still would be winning them right now. They'd be the most overwhelming team to ruin the league ever in sports. Like, they'd still be winning championships because Steph would still not win finals MVP because now it would be Durant making all the jumpers because you can't guard all of them. But it's been stripped down so that Durant now leaves. And what a mind bleep this is on the legacy. Steph's couple of games from showing everybody, hey, Durant, you needed him. He didn't need you. He's a couple of games from like one finals MVP from, oh, look at that, and dragging Draymond with him. You couldn't get along with Draymond, but I carried his dead ass at the end too. Like, that's what Steph's like. You couldn't even get along with Draymond, and you blew it up. But look, they had to bench his ass, and I still torched the number one defense because Draymond's out here fouling all up. I'm out here with liability Clay. I'm going to do it by myself. I'm going to be all the things, Kevin, that they said you couldn't be when you had Westbrook and OKC. He's 3 games from it because he's going to earn our respect because at the last embers of this dynasty, we're like, oh, shit, is Steph going to do this by himself at the end? It's the last bit of what they've got left from being light years ahead is that Steph shoots better than everybody?
I will say, I had a bizarre experience with this game 4 on Friday night. I fell asleep at halftime. And so I woke up the next morning and I listened to post-game reaction podcasts before I watched the second half. I then went back and watched the second half. And it was interesting how much the conversation was about Steph when you consider that in the fourth quarter, he didn't make a field goal until 3 minutes and 46 seconds left in the quarter. The game was being decided by all these other guys that we're talking about as not being good enough. Clay had 7 points in that fourth quarter, and all those shots were massive. Jordan Poole pulled off a couple. Andrew Wiggins pulled
off a
couple.
Boston goes 7 or 8 minutes without scoring.
Well, they went the final 5 minutes scoring 3 points. So it was a lot of defensive work that went into this, but Steph got some help in that fourth quarter. Which isn't to
that's
say
not
that,
like, be the story, though.
Right,
that's
not going to be the story. Because yeah, 43. It's a weird moment where the 3 quarters that preceded it have more weight in the minds of the viewer. And I think it's all to do with that moment in the third quarter where he hits, you know, contested 3 in front of Robert Williams, contested 3 where he gets fouled by Jason Tatum, in that moment where he used Gary Payton as a shield in the corner to get around him and drill a 3. Like, those 3 threes that he hit in pretty quick succession were the holy shit Steph Curry moment of that game, and that lived longer in the memory than the fourth quarter where he didn't do a ton. Obviously, his gravity plays a huge role in them being able to score, but he actually got the help that he needed in that fourth quarter.
Oh, but this is the amazement that I have in what it is that he's presently accomplishing, because that's a team that turns the ball over, and there is nothing missing from the resume of Steph Curry before this started other than people saying he has not won a finals MVP. For him to be the smallest player on the court, and to be facing a defense that none of us have any doubt about how good it is, no matter how injured it is. Steph Curry, as a gravitational pull, pulling all of that defense to wherever he is. 4 long guys, because you don't have to respect Draymond. And look, if Clay beats you in this series, you're fine. But everything is geared. Every Udoka move. I don't know if you guys saw it, but a Boston reporter reported that Udoka went to his huddle and said to his players, and Steph did this to him, "We need to stop playing like assholes," is what it is that he told the Boston Celtics. This was his coaching.
Like Frank Asscrack.
Yeah.
Just yes. Like Frank Asscrack. Ah. This was his coach of the year moment. We need to stop playing like assholes. That's and great. Who made them look like assholes? It's just Steph and the gravitational pull of... They're all trying to stop him, and they can't. They're all trying to stop him. Jason Tatum is trying to make an ascendant leap that, honestly, they can win the championship without much help from Tatum. They won game 1 with him going 3-for-17. Like, Tatum can win a championship and beat Steph Curry because he's got the best defense and the best team, but it might not be because Jason Tatum actually beat Steph Curry.
Yeah, he has a lower field goal percentage than Steph Curry averages points per game in this series. It's remarkable how bad Jason Tatum has been. And it's not like all those looks are bad either. It's just for whatever reason, he has had a bad finals.
Is it and whatever if, reason, or is it that he was obviously hurt grabbing three body parts in the last series and all these guys? We're never going to give them the excuse of, I didn't think I can make the measurements at all at the end of the Eastern Conference Finals because everybody looked so broken to me, and now we're just back to everyone's healthy again?
Steph Curry was an injury doubt for Game 4. Scored 43 points. So I don't know how to do that measurement. I do agree with you that the stinger or whatever he had in his shoulder still appears to be bothering him. But it's kind of hard. Like, if Jason Tatum comes out and has a great Game 5, did he miraculously recover in the two games?
Well,
like,
what happened with Jimmy Butler? Can anyone explain that? Game 4 and 5, where he's a human torso, and he's got no legs, no arms, no nothing, can't shoot threes, can't shoot anything. Goes two games where you're like, this is the end of his season, and his body is expiring for the season, and then out of nowhere. Game. Is it the magic of voodoo medicine? Is it that we don't know what they shoot into these guys?
We don't. We don't know what the medical treatments are game to game, because I think that in the regular season, Jimmy Butler probably misses a week, if not longer, with the injury that he had in the Eastern Conference Finals. And with whatever injections, with whatever rest and recovery, manages to summon a performance. I just don't know how to do measurements alongside injuries.
Let's do this then.
If the guy's playing. If he's not playing, then be like, all
right. Okay, we will have three games to make this assessment. I don't believe that Tatum or Curry are any better or worse for whatever it is happens in the next three games. To me, they don't need to prove anything to me. Jason Tatum, while healthy, is an exceptional basketball player. And if he can't beat Steph Curry at the end, because Steph Curry is an unprecedented basketball player, I will not hold it against Jason. I'm supposed to. But the part that I want to discuss with you guys, because I love that his mouth has made him an integral figure, and now the pressure is on him as he is the worst player on the court. When you're Draymond Green and CJ McCollum is questioning you and saying to you that he thinks the Celtics are going to win the title, and Draymond Green's response is, well, they're going to be ringless, just like you, CJ. Just like you. When you're that kind of mouth, what is the audience rooting for to happen in this series? Do you want them to win in spite of Draymond Green? Do you want them to lose so that Draymond Green gets humbled? Draymond Green, his mouth has turned him into a pivotal figure here, even as he stinks. Like a pivotal figure in the middle of everything. There are plenty of players on the court who stink who are not getting this amount of attention and pressure. He wanted all of this. He's got a podcast that he wants you to listen to.
The crowd was enchanting, good luck next game, Draymond.
But it is the Boston crowd, because it's not like the Boston crowd are terribly sympathetic figures, like representative of what the neutral tuning in to watch the NBA Finals is experiencing with Golden State. I love Golden State. I love watching them play. I love Steph Curry. I think aesthetically they've been by far the most entertaining team of the last 10 years. They took the mantle from the 7 seconds or less Suns of team that you just want to watch on a Tuesday night on ESPN, in my opinion. But the Draymond Green thing, like, I don't know if that's enough to contaminate all of it for a lot of people, because he is, I would say, the biggest character remaining in the NBA Finals. That he, with his mouth, outshines, at times, Steph Curry and Jason Tatum. Even Curry, because we stink at praise as a sports press. Like, we're not good at, wow, Steph Curry, how great is he? Pretty damn great. Here's how great he is. Steph Curry, great. Like, we do well with Draymond Green talking some shit.
It's just not interesting to always talk about how good someone is, right? Like, we like to focus on the weird things or the bad things because there's just more to debate and talk about. Woody, if you're going to make it in this industry, you can't just be complimenting and praising guys for being good.
What do you hate about the Warriors?
I love them.
Who needs to shut up?
No, nobody.
Draymond doesn't need to shut up and not dribble. He needs to shut up and never dribble.
I find fascinating what he's going through as a human being, because he's like, he can only do it this way. There is no other, like, even if he's being bad, even if he's shooting 23% from the field and 0% from three, that's what he's doing in this series. 0% from three. And yet he still carries himself as if he's the most important player, as if there's an orbit around how the referees treat him. And I'm fascinated that he can't even switch it off now.
I love delusional confidence. I love delusional confidence that lacks all self-awareness. I believe that in sports, sports can be so humbling that it can penetrate and dent even delusional confidence. And what Draymond Green has now welcomed into his life, all he's got to do, Whittingham, is merely not be totally terrible, make his coach bench you in the pivotal moment. All he's got to be is less terrible than Steve Kerr. I've placed atop you the hardest decision, which is take volatile Draymond Green out of the game, maybe lose the fourth quarter, and deal with that in your locker room when it's down 3-1 and he's pissed off that you've benched him. That's crazy that Draymond has pressured his organization light years ahead of everybody to place him in a corner where all he's got to do to get out of it is merely not be incompetent.
If he made a three, the Chase Center tonight will go insane. That's all he has to do, because you know that there's a feeling in that arena when he lines up for the first three tonight. It's like, oh, shit. Can this be the one that finally gets him going? If he hits the first three, I think that arena will go
Turned him into Tony Allen, though? You guys remember where you were when it became Golden State passing Memphis because it was like Bogut in game 5 and 6. Oh, never mind. Tony Allen, just shoot all you want out there wearing your construction boots.
They smacked their forehead and realized, oh, we don't have to defend him.
We don't have to guard him.
Let's just have him stand near the rim.
God, that game is cruel, though. you're Tony Allen, Draymond. The Celtics have turned you into Tony Allen when you're a Hall of Fame player.
If anything, worse, because at least Tony Allen was the most reliable defender. Draymond Green can't defend without fouling in this series.
In fairness to Draymond Green, and somebody has to say it, he had 9 rebounds and 8 assists in the last game. I mean, he wasn't doing nothing out there. And if he comes out in the next game and hits his first 1 or 2 threes, He's going to put up a metaphorical middle finger to everybody and say I'm back, and I wouldn't blame him.
He might do a literal middle finger to everybody.
You never know.
Yeah,
but I think Draymond Green's fine. He's going to be fine. Would it surprise you if he had a big game,
Greg,
in 5? Wouldn't surprise me.
He forced his top 15 coach of all time to bench him in the fourth quarter.
I get that.
When their dynasty was being decided,
right?
In the fourth quarter, at the most pivotal time, when they needed something, 9 rebound Draymond, when they could have used defense.
Right.
Draymond yanked off the court for 7 minutes and pissed off about it. That's not us thinking Draymond Green's not going to be fine. That's Steve Kerr telling you that in the most pivotal moment of their season, he could not trust Draymond Green to be fine. It's not a small indictment, and it's a really difficult decision to put in Steve Kerr's lap. You have to be a special kind of terrible for him to not trust you when you've won him championships, plural.
Would it surprise you if Draymond Green in Game 5 came out and had one of those 8 or 10 point first quarters?
They're going to leave him wide open to not be an incompetent basketball player. That's not where the standard's supposed to be on Draymond Green when he's selling you your podcast and his mouth and everything else. The standard isn't, hey, can you, like, yes, no, I wouldn't be surprised if Draymond was great. I'm more interested in, holy shit, the pressure has arrived at a place where he better be something less than incompetent. We'll give him great if they win. If he's merely less than totally incompetent so that his coach has to bench him.
That's fair.
I mean, it's unbelievable, the pressure that he's brought on himself. That delusional confidence now goes into games. It's best of 3. And you ain't done shit that Steph hasn't had to bail you out of in the first 2 games. And I love that. I believe Draymond Green to be really, 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 really mentally tough. It'll be tested. Because this shit's hard. Once you get to this point where your mother's out there saying, I don't recognize Draymond Green, that's your mother. You're calling your mother's house. Mom, come on. You got to have her on the podcast. You got to have her. Come on, Draymond. Just get her on the podcast. What are you doing, Mom?
Is there an accusation here that maybe this is conspiracy for Draymond Green's mom to be the big get for Draymond Green's podcast?
I believe Amin El-Hassan.
Building the narrative around the podcast?
Amin El-Hassan, I think on Basketball Illuminati with Tom Haberstroh, is about to accuse Draymond of dumping games on purpose to promote his podcast. To be this bad on purpose because it's just great for the podcast business. He's clearly going to retire into the podcast business.
Yeah, I mean, who has their parents on a podcast with them, right? That's just weird.
That'd be the worst.
Can't find another guest.
I know, that's terrible.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
Earlier in the show, the question was asked, what would Stugatz do with one invisible day?
Stugatz.
One day where he could be invisible. We decided that during banking hours, he would choose a weekday. He would rob all the banks in the universe from 8 to 5. And then at night, he would alter sporting event results by being an invisible man in games he had bet on.
This is the Don Libertard Show with the Stugatz.
Let's do funniest thing from the sports weekend here.
Hey, people. Tell us what in the sport made you laugh hardest this weekend. It is a segment we call What Made You Laugh This Weekend. Ha ha ha!
Funniest thing from the sports weekend is presented by CBDMD.
Tony, I understand you finally played basketball with Ted Lasso creator Bill Lawrence this weekend.
Wow. It was awesome.
Where's my invite?
Lost in the mail, sorry. Yeah, I send yours by mail. No, he was awesome. He's got a great old man game. He's got a great pump.
That's
up and under.
Rude.
No, hold on.
Rude.
He's a real basketball player. He's just an older guy. But the way that he can get on the block, kind of shimmy somebody down, give him a pump fake, let him fly by and go under was great. He had like 3 or 4 of those. The guy couldn't stop it. It was incredible.
Great old man game, a compliment.
Were you guys on the same team?
Absolutely. No, we were on opposite teams.
Was there any one-on-ones? Any, you know?
Yeah, we had a couple one-on-ones, but, you know, he didn't want to take it to the big dog. That's cool.
Okay. Well, there it is.
I love Bill Lawrence, though. We're going to play again, probably next week.
I learned something else about the block this weekend that Ron McGill had on Tony that I will bring up tomorrow during the Ron McGill segment, I think.
Whatever that is an absolute fallacy, because I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. I caught the ball, middle of the free throw line, turned around, Ron was in the 2-3. I tried to put up a little floater, and he got it by his like fingernail and blocked it out.
Super chatty when he's not here. Takes.
Yeah, but when he's here, I mean, all he can do is just say fake things. So imagine.
We will address this tomorrow with Ron McGill if there's not another sea turtle emergency. I have found another detail that I want to share with the audience that I believe to be a bit shocking on what happened in that game between Ron McGill and Tony, but we'll leave that for tomorrow. Chris, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
I'm going to go with Jeremy Schapp chiming in on Twitter, defending Chris Whittingham. I don't believe it. Schapp's wrong.
What?
He said that Witty says bona fides. Correctly. And it's nonsense. But how happy it made Witty is what's my funniest thing from the weekend.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Does Chris Cody root against Chris Whittingham's happiness? Whittingham was radiant with joy. Jessica, you know, you were radiant with joy because Lando was on with us and you were very excited about that. But you were also very excited because he didn't know the pronunciation that Whittingham uses of bona fides. He rejected that.
Also controversy. Never heard of controversy. controversy.
Just nonsense, by the way.
Well, so you are now radiant nonsense. Because Jeremy Schapp is the authority on these things?
I mean, if we can't trust Jeremy Schapp with language, then who can we trust?
Mad Dog Russo.
Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. If we can't trust Jeremy Schapp with language, who can we trust? Yes or no?
Literally anyone else. Like, why is Jeremy Schapp the arbiter on the English language?
He's the, in my view, from a broadcasting standpoint, one of the best that has ever done it.
Yeah,
in terms of elocution, use of language, he is a phenomenal broadcaster.
If Bob Lee would have tweeted at you, you would have said the same about Bob.
So true.
Yeah, well, I mean, the two of them. The two of them are the main people.
He's not like an English scholar. He's a host.
He might be, honestly.
He sounds good. I'm not knocking him. He's not like a bad person. I'm just saying.
It was also such a funny way.
He might be wrong, too.
Feels like a bit of a put-on with Schapp.
Live from the Belmont Stakes, I'm Jeremy Schapp, ESPN.
I believe Jeremy Schapp is somebody who protects our language. I believe Jeremy Schapp is someone that I trust if he is saying he will take great care to be right, I think. He wants to be accurate.
I love that, like, also, he used it in the context of talking about the Stanley Cup Finals. It wasn't about, like, sports watching at LIV Golf, which I presume is Jeremy Schapp's wheelhouse. It was talking to PK Subban about the Stanley Cup Finals and asking him if the Tampa Bay Lightning's playoff bona fides are enough to get them over the line in the Eastern Finals. Just not the context I would have imagined, but I was alarmed at how I was trying to hide the smile on my face after I saw it, because I seemed too oddly happy.
Really? Chris Cody claiming that Whittingham... Okay, you claiming that Whittingham got an erection when Jeremy Schapp said... Chris Cody seems to be indicating that back there. He did a lot more...
There's a lot of things. I said that's not all you did. I didn't necessarily mean that.
You could have been eating anything.
Okay, yeah. Billy,
What
was the funniest thing?
Let me ask you guys a question. You think Jeremy Schapp has a badge that he created for himself as defender of the English language that he just pulls out from time to time?
You should recommend it for his Twitter bio. I'd be more than happy to endorse that wholeheartedly.
This isn't LinkedIn. You can't endorse a skill on a Twitter bio.
It also means nothing coming from me.
Well, but if a guy has spent 25 years of a journalism career trying to be super accurate, longer basically, I think, Jessica, than you've been alive, it is a bit dismissive to smear him with not honoring that he would try to get things right as opposed to anyone around here.
I want to see him with his hair down. I want to see what the real Jeremy Schapp
hammered,
is.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, witty right now?
Oh, I've seen him hammered.
Really?
Yeah.
You tell.
It's not as crazy as you imagine. Billy, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Joe Maddon getting a mohawk to surprise his team and getting fired before team could see
his
mohawk.
It's just so great.
Allegedly.
It's not funny. It's just sad.
It is, but it's funny sad. It's funny sad because you have the photograph of him in a lonely bathroom mirror, like, at the end of his career.
He has to cut his own hair, right? Like, finish off the job. There's no way he goes back to the same barber and he's like, Hank, didn't work out.
Hank.
I just love it as a last-ditch motivational technique. You know how I'm going to get Otani and Trout to be better? I'm going to cut my hair. I'm a genius CEO type.
I'm going to be like one of the youngs.
I'm going to be wacky at 68 years old. I'm going to get a mohawk, and I'm going to go in there, and they are going to be shaking up.
I'm going to shuck a bra when I walk into the door.
I'm going to loosen up the clubhouse, or I'm going to go in and immediately get fired and then leave the facility with a mohawk I shouldn't have as a 68-year-old man.
Just imagine the vacation, though, that he planned right when he got fired. That's always what I think about when, like, someone rich gets fired. I'm like, oh, this sucks. I lost my job, but I have millions of dollars, and I can plan the wildest trip. I'm not going to be home for 6 months.
Are you the residue of sadness on Joe Maddon? You believe he immediately cut his hair, Jessica? You immediately, you think that he got some help cutting his hair? Did he go to a barber? Did he even leave the facility? Like, does he drive home with a mohawk? Is he wearing a baseball cap?
I think he sleeps on it for one night, and then he wakes up the next morning and starts his new life and shaves it as like a ritualistic beginning, a new beginning.
Does it himself, though.
He probably laughs at it. Joe Maddon seems like a guy who has perspective on things. He probably says, wow, look at me. I'm a f***ing idiot.
I think he leans into it. I think that's his new look from now on. When he gets his next managerial job, he's rocking the hawk at his introductory press conference. Wow.
That's a great call.
Rock that hawk. Rock that hawk. Rock that hawk!
Sounds dangerously close to sounding like something else. Jessica, what is the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
It was Yuki Tsunoda, his rear wing, like, broke in half, and he went into the pit lane, and the engineers came out and taped it on up, and then he went right back out into the race while an FIA steward stormed down the pit lane to yell at them, apparently, because that was not an adequate fix, in his opinion.
Fixing a Formula One car with duct tape. It was unbelievable.
Millions of dollars.
It was a great visual.
Just so that he can maybe, without the ability, so basically that rear wing opens so you can gain some extra speed in the straights, and he couldn't do that because it's duct taped together. So without the added benefit of speed, is trying to get from 13th to 10th in the final three laps. Instead of just saying, you know what, guys, the wing broke. Not going to work out today. It's let's send a car at 200 miles an hour held together by duct tape so we can maybe, without the added benefit of speed, get to 10th place.
He was having a great race, too. I Googled Jeremy Schaap a few minutes ago. Schaap. Jeremy Schaap did not know this man was 52 years old. He looks like he's in his 30s.
What? Wait, he's only 52?
Hold on a second. You thought he was in his 30s?
I'd say like 39.
He has the soul of a 74-year-old.
He does, but he has great skin. Whatever his skin routine is, I would like to know. Second thing I learned, his dad's name, Dick Schaap.
Well, he's a legendary journalist.
Yes,
but are we all, like, the joke is that his name's Dick Schaap.
But you're making a joke because you don't know who Dick Schaap is, where Dick Schaap is.
I understand he's a famous guy. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page as we speak.
But if it was Dick Schaap, it'd be funny.
Do not talk about that. Dick Schaap would be funny.
Yeah, because like a shop.
I mispronounced his name.
For Dick Schaap. Yeah.
That's a totally different place. That's where one shops for dicks.
Or fixes them.
That's true. It could be body. It could also be a body shop for dicks.
That's right. An ED doctor.
It's not a dick shop. It's an ED doctor.
Too much detail.
All right. Put it on the poll. Put it on the poll, please. At Levitard Show. Do you envy the skin routine of Jeremy Schaap? And does Jeremy Schaap have the soul of a 77-year-old?
Great skin.
What was the funniest thing from the sports weekend, Whittingham?
I'm going with Mike Trout blaming ESPN Fantasy for the issues that happened in his fantasy league that led to the altercation between Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson. It's always the host's fault. There's always an email that goes around at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Hey, this doesn't look right in my lineup. The commissioner's got to go in. I'm just imagining Mike Trout fielding those texts. Like, he's got a Sunday 1 p.m. game during week one of the season, and he's in the clubhouse before the game fielding emails and texts from an angry Jock Peterson and Tommy Pham about what's going on in his fantasy league, and he blames ESPN and an engine IR thing. It's just so funny that he blamed the host of the fantasy league rather than himself for this.
You have to imagine that somewhere in management, someone saw that and then, like, sent an email to an underling and was like, hey, Mike Trout says we need to fix this for next year. Like, can we look into this? And they're like, yeah, we'll look into that to fix the Trout problem. And they do nothing, right?
I love that this Trout story is the single most interesting thing I've ever read about him as someone who has been the best baseball player any of us have ever seen, better than Babe Ruth.
First time you've ever wanted him wired for sound.
Yes,
on
I want
Sunday
to find
baseball.
Out what Mike Trout has to say about this. I want honesty from Mike Trout. This is his most controversial moment,
right?
Being at the center of this. Greg, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
So Cubs are playing at Yankees. Stanton hits a deep drive. The fans cheer like it's a home run. It's caught on the warning track. Cubs Twitter mocks the fans, tweets out, Yankee fans think everything is a home run. The Yankees go on to hit 6 home runs in the game, and the Yankees Twitter tweets back, looks like maybe everything is a home run. I enjoyed that.
The Yankees were up like 8-1 in the second inning. They are totally overwhelming. And John Smoltz, who the internet loves to drag, John Smoltz. We've all lived long enough to see John Smoltz go from one of the smartest baseball people you've ever met to now someone that baseball people laugh about. A Cubs pitcher threw a ball to Giancarlo Stanton in which John Smoltz said, "I'm impressed with this kid," and the next pitch left the stadium faster than any ball this season. Like by a million miles an hour. It's the hardest ball hit. Giancarlo Stanton hit one of those balls that threatens to hit the shortstop in the face and then ends up in the upper deck because he hit a ball so incredibly hard. I can't believe that John Smoltz is someone we now laugh at his baseball coverage. But I didn't think this was funny, but I did think it was interesting. As the Broncos went for $4.5 billion to the Walton family, Andrew Petcash reports what John Elway could have done at the end of his career that very quietly Tom Brady was trying to put together last year and did not deny that he was trying to put together with the Dolphin. Toward the end of his career, according to Petcash, John Elway could have gotten 10% of the team for the $21 million that was owed him, and 10% of the team for another $15 million. So he could have had 20% of the Broncos for $36 million, which would have been worth $1 billion+ in the purchase that was just made. And Petcash reports that Elway instead decided to put that money into investments, all that failed, and a hedge fund manager that went to jail for 40 years with $15 million of the dollars that he gave him.
It's not most interesting things from the sports weekend, Dan. That's a different segment.
Damn it. Let's do that one next.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.